So, again this morning, really wishing you all well with all the different things that are around as we continue our retreat. And I wanted to begin just by recapping a little bit on what we've done so far, and then moving into the third way of establishing mindfulness. But yes, a reminder that we've been looking at these different foundations or different ways of establishing mindfulness, and we began with mindfulness of the body, something we begin with, but of course something that we never leave. It's not that we move on from that, that's still there and informing all of our practice. Awareness of the breath, we've been emphasizing a lot, haven't we, the contact with the ground and the seat. It's a whole sense of embodied awareness that's really the ground of our practice. And we spoke about how that can continue into different postures, different activities, and also these contemplations on the body being part of nature, you know, the parts of the body and the elements. And then we moved on to explore Vedana, this feeling tone, the sense of experience being pleasant or unpleasant, or neither, that arises with the five senses that we're used to, and also with the mind, with thoughts and images. And again, last night I was really exploring how crucial that sense of Vedana is, that when we don't notice the pleasant and the unpleasant in that basic way, how that can grow into some of the patterns that we were describing yesterday, I was describing yesterday. And so today we come to the third foundation, or the third way of establishing mindfulness, which is mindfulness of mind states. We might also say mindfulness of moods. Citta is the Pali word for this, citta. And one of our colleagues and teachers, John Peacock, I heard him once say that you're always in a mood, as a way of thinking about this. You're always in a mood. Now, obviously, that's the kind of saying that sometimes is, you know, code for you're always in a bad mood. It's a critical saying, but he doesn't mean it like that. But we're always in some kind of mood. There's always some kind of state of mind that shapes and filters our experience. And so you can see this as being a little bit like coloured spectacles, coloured glasses. If you put on rose-coloured glasses, the world looks rose-coloured, green, it looks green, etc. Yeah? And so that's an interesting image, isn't it? To think that we're not simply in contact with reality in a very simple, neutral, and uncomplicated way, but our sense of ourselves and the world and all around us is filtered and shaped by the state of mind that's present. And because it's so all-encompassing, it can actually be quite difficult to see at times, yeah? 'Cause it's shaping the whole way we're experiencing in that moment. Sometimes I've thought about this in my home. You know, I can look at my home in different ways, in different states of mind. So in some states of mind, I'll notice the cracks in the wall, or the things that need tidying up, or the clutter that's never completely cleared, or yeah, the jobs that we never quite get round to doing. Yeah, but in another state of mind, you may notice something very different. I notice something very different. You know, the things that are beautiful or useful, things that I might take for granted at other times, things that give a sense of it being a lovely place to be. But in different states of mind, we can be tuned into different things. Yeah. So I could feel the same in this hall, really. You know, in some states of mind, I'll be in here and just think, what a beautiful place. And there's Kuan Yin and the Buddha, and such a place dedicated to spiritual practice, and that's wonderful. And you know, but maybe in another state of mind, it's interesting because I can switch it on. So as soon as I switched on that more critical state of mind, I can notice here there's a little bit of plastering needs doing. It's hidden from you, we hide it behind there. And you can see those wires coming out of the speaker, you see. Part of me would like those to be embedded into the wall, so it was a little bit more zen, and, you know. Little chip on the bottom of the radiator, you know. So don't invite me round when I'm in that mood, you know, it's not nice. But can you see what our minds can do, yeah? So we're experiencing the world in very different ways, depending if the mind filled with contentment, a mind filled with irritation, annoyance, mind filled with greed and craving, of course, sees very different things again. And in the sutta, it's described as we can notice a mind with lust, we might say a mind with craving, or a mind without lust, a mind with anger, or a mind without anger, a mind with delusion, and a mind without. So we start to become more and more aware of these different states of mind that are present. One thing that I've really pondered a lot is that you also come across in the sutta the words wholesome and unwholesome. And I think it's very interesting how we use those words skillfully in our practice. And it's quite a conundrum, really. How do we hold, on the one hand, these teachings that there can be wholesome and unwholesome states of mind, alongside that famous definition from Jon Kabat-Zinn of mindfulness being non-judgmental? And they do actually come together, but sometimes it's a little tricky to think how that is. So you may find it at times useful to have a sense, is this state of mind wholesome or unwholesome, or we might say even helpful or unhelpful. But if there's something that feels more unhelpful, we don't react to that with aversion. And I think this is also what that sense of mindfulness being non-judgmental is saying, because so often we can add that, I shouldn't be feeling angry, sad, irritated, anxious, or whatever it is, yeah, ashamed. All of these states of mind that we might kind of perceive in that way, I shouldn't be feeling them, I need to get rid of them, they're some sign that I'm I'm not a good person or something like that. Yeah. So this sense of a non-judgmental awareness or a welcoming awareness can know that actually all of these different things come and go for human beings, so it's okay. We can make space for them, we can be with them. If we think of the rain teaching, you know, we respond to those by allowing, being curious, nurturing, not responding by trying to get rid of. But within that, there might be this word that Jenny spoke of, this word discernment. Discernment. So there's also a sense, is this something that's helpful to feed, or something that's not so helpful to feed? Yeah? Something that is leading to my own well-being and the well-being of others, or something that might feel more of an obstacle to that. So again, it's something to explore in the practice. You know, is it possible to have a sense of wholesome and unwholesome, wholesome, helpful and unhelpful, without that leading to a kind of aversion towards these places when they come up? And I also find the teaching come from an 8-week course called Mindfulness-Based Compassionate Living, that really teaches that all of the different emotions that come and go, and this you could say different states of mind that come and go, they're messengers. So that, I think, is also really helpful to hold alongside the sense that maybe some are more helpful than others. That even what we might think of as difficult or negative emotions can have messages for us. You know, like when we feel angry, it's some sense of a boundary being not respected, you know, or something, some injustice. You know, when we feel sad, something important is lost. When we feel anxious, you know, again, trying to prevent some harm in the future. So this can also be really skillful, I think, to you know, not just have a sense, oh, there are these states of mind that just shouldn't be there, or something, but we can just sense, oh, well, what's the message here? And that leads us more to a sense of kind of feeling what's underneath, making space for. And that also means when we do hear these things, that they're not lingering in the same way as they do when we resist them, or a sense that they're wrong or bad. So when you're practicing with this mindfulness of states of mind, it's helpful not to be busy with it. I don't think we suddenly need a very different kind of technique today, as if, okay, now I've got to every moment notice the state of mind. Because they're so all-pervasive, that wouldn't be so appropriate. But it's more a sense of just every now and again you might drop in the question, you know, what's the state of mind right now? What's here right now? And keep that simple. It doesn't have to be complicated. You know, some psychologists, they talk about, you know, there being not very many basic emotions. But you could have a sense, oh, is there contentment, irritation, excitement, worry, those kind of things. Keep it really simple. Yeah. But just the habit of beginning to recognize this is so helpful. Yeah, because as we recognize the states of mind, we're less governed by them. We begin to know that it's a state of mind. I can't remember if I told you you this, because it's something I say a lot. So forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but I sometimes have these states of mind where I think I need to rethink lots of things in my life, and like change all my plans and do something totally different. And then I notice if I have a sleep or something to eat, that suddenly all that just disappears, you know. And that's really interesting, isn't it? That you know those states of mind, I've really got to work all this out. And so to actually, to recognize, that kind of state of mind there is very freeing. Some states of mind kind of present to us as insoluble problems. I've got to work this out and think this, I could do that, but I'd miss out on that, maybe I should do this. And it goes round and round and round. But when we wake up to the fact, oh, well, that's simply the state of mind creating that sense of me and my experience in that moment. And we can be with it in a different way. So we're not following that, but maybe we're doing what that underlying state of mind needs. Okay, so today, maybe just every now and again, dropping in the question, what's the state of mind right now? The beginning and end of a walking path are useful. Yeah? Just every now and again. The way in which we're doing activities can be a clue. I mentioned the angry ironing the other day, didn't I? You know, you can see that when you're doing something. There's something here that's given me a clue of the state of mind. The thoughts give us a clue. You know, to expand what Beck was saying, if Beck is saying that depression leads to particular thoughts about self, world and future, we could also say that other states of mind do as well. Yeah, other states of mind have different sense of self, world and future that come with them. I remember once saying to a teacher here that I was doing walking meditation and the thought came up, I've had a really good year. And I was always interested by that, because she didn't say, oh, tell me a bit more about your year. But she said, that indicates a certain amount of, you know, contentment or joy in the mind. It was interesting, I hadn't thought about it like that. We start to see the thoughts that pop into the mind as just reflecting this underlying mood that's there. This is, of course, very central to MBCT, you know, teaching people to see the thoughts that arise as almost like symptoms of the underlying mood. So, in this morning's practice, I also wanted to begin with something that's somewhat related to this, actually, which is a practice on gratitude and appreciation. And the interesting thing about these practices is that they're very gently, and this word is important, but very gently nudging the mood, the state of mind, into this sense of appreciation. It's not a demand or an insistence. So it's also quite important as you do these practices, not, oh, now suddenly I'm supposed to feel a particular way. But it's just gently inclining the mind towards noticing what's good and lovely and okay. As you're all probably aware, there's this idea that our minds have a negativity bias, that we're, for very good reasons, very understandable reasons, focused on what's threatening, what's wrong, what's not okay. But we can see sometimes if that's a program just running in the background of our minds all the time, that it's also not leading to our happiness, our well-being, to be in that state of alert and threat the whole time. So this sense of gratitude and appreciation can really counter that tendency, that negativity bias. So I'll guide us through this really, really gently. It will just be for the first 5 or 10 minutes of the practice, and then we'll settle into a more silent practice. But if it's something that you find useful and skillful, then feel free to continue with this. So finding your posture. Actually, my legs are just telling me, I don't know if you need it, but maybe if you would like a minute or two to stand or something. My legs do, anyway. if you're feeling really settled, no need, but those of us who would appreciate that, I can do that. Yeah, it's taking a moment to move in any way that you need. And when you feel ready, taking your seat. As we begin this practice, starting by sensing the state of mind that's here right now. Maybe there's a sense of contentment, maybe more irritation or worry, maybe excitement. Just noticing whatever's present. And as we've been practicing with all week, no need to feel that we need to fix that and create a different state of mind or push anything away, but notice, be aware of what's here. then allowing the attention to come into the body, to move down in the body into the legs and feet, feeling the ground beneath you. So sometimes this sense of connection with the earth can be really supportive. As if we have a heavy base, a solid base. Whatever else is happening, whatever else comes and goes, we can feel this base, this connection with the earth, quite literally being grounded. Legs and feet, feeling the ground beneath you. Really taking your seat, feeling that contact and connection. As you arrive in the posture, feeling the breath in the body, sense that the breath is here in the midst of it all. You can feel really supportive to have the sense of a place to come back to. Whatever thoughts and feelings and states of mind come and go, can return to the body and breath. Steadying the mind in the midst of it. And as we sense the body and breath, very gently inclining the mind towards a sense of appreciation and gratitude, just if this feels supportive. And so beginning by bringing to mind something that's here at Gaia House that you appreciate. It might be something in the gardens, it Might be things you've seen around the house. Sense of the people who are here, taking care of things. Seeing what comes to mind, and just gently open to a sense of noticing and appreciating what's good, what's okay, helpful. Might be the food. Staying in contact with the body and breath. Just gently open to that sense of appreciation. And letting go of these particular images or reflections, staying in contact with the body, with the breath. And then in your life more generally, being open to appreciating any place that is supportive for you. Maybe a place in nature, somewhere else that's beautiful, uplifting. How is it to bring this place to mind? Without an insistence that we feel a particular way, but just noticing. What's okay? What's helpful? Remembering that at any time, if this doesn't feel such a helpful practice, simply staying with body and breath, sensing what feels wise for you. And allowing the sense of this place to gently fade to the background of awareness. Being open to any objects, any things in your life that are useful, beautiful. Maybe things in your room, in your home. Maybe things you use a lot and maybe take for granted. How is it to bring them to mind with a sense of appreciation? Appreciation of what's helpful, supportive. Taking time to notice what's okay. Letting the sense of these things again gently fade into the background. Being open to appreciating any people in your life who enrich your life. People who are supportive, people whose presence brings you joy. Again, seeing who comes to mind. No demand or insistence we feel a particular way, but if it feels skillful, just a gentle inclination towards noticing what's okay. Supportive, helpful, nourishing. Sometimes these practices can bring up the opposite feelings, and if that's the case, as much as feels possible, bringing a sense of kindness, friendliness to whatever's here for you. for the rest of this practice, we'll move into silence, and feeling free to use your own sense of what's a wise way to practice. Perhaps now simply returning to the body, the breath, present with all that arises. Or if this cultivation of appreciation feels helpful, feeling free to continue, seeing what else comes to mind. As we settle into the stillness and silence. wishing you well as you continue your practice with the walking meditation. And really feeling free to just drop in that question, what is the state of mind? What's the mood that's present? And also, if you wish, inclining the mind towards the sense of appreciation as you practice today. So time for walking now, and we'll be back together at 11:15.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.